Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from thousands of successful individuals from around the world. I'm your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm privileged to welcome a very, very tall leader from the world of academia from Virginia, USA, Professor Edward Hess. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Professor Hess is the Professor Emeritus of Business Administration at the Darden School of Business, University of Virginia. And he's an author. He's an author of 15 books. And all of you know I'm very partial to authors. He's an author of 15 books. His latest book is On Your Work Journey. So, Ed, let me start by asking you a simple question. Tell me about your journey in brief and what got you into the world of academia.
Well, that's an interesting question, especially when you use the words in the brief. My journey has been an unusual journey, mm-hmm. in the sense that from my beginnings, all right, I was born much earlier than I should have been born, and mm-hmm. Stayed in an oxygen tent for 6 weeks. Wow. So I was sort of a miracle baby. That's what they called it. And from then on out, I was sort of always an outlier, if you will, always never fit in the crowd. And that basically, you know, I overcame that because both my mother and father were also outliers. All right. And in the area that we lived in Georgia. And people reached out to help us, but more importantly, my mother, right when I was in about the second grade, said to me, "I'm going to save up money, and every 2 to 3 months, I'm going to take you to the bookstore, and I'm going to buy you a book, and you're going to read books, and you're going to learn from books." And so I started reading books when I was 6 years old, and I was reading books about successful people. Whether it was athletes or lawyers or politicians or business people, all right? And I started reading and I started loving books. And then I started reading the encyclopedias and trying to, you know, learn. And so I basically, and that changed my life. And then my life was changed when our head football coach in that community called me when I was getting ready to go to high school in the eighth grade and said, "How would you like to be an athletic trainer?" And I said, "What's an athletic trainer?" And he says, "You tape ankles." And I said, "Well, I don't know how to do that." He says, "I know that, but I know you can learn." And I said, "Well, God, that sounds like fun," since I wasn't on the football team and I wasn't on the in crowd, and that's what would get me in the in crowd. And he said, "But there's only one request that you have to do. You have to come to my house at 7:30 every morning for the next 5 years, and I'll drive you to school and we'll work together."
Okay.
And that changed everything in my life.
Wow.
Because the most powerful man in that area of the state put his hand over my head and my family's head and said, "Leave them alone. They are with me." And that basically started the journey. I ended up getting the journey, which gave me a full scholarship to be an athletic trainer at a major university, which then changed into the digital science. And it just kept changing. And so, you know, I became I went to law school, never being really taking any of the boards or doing anything because of people that helped me get there. And so I've had many different opportunities to learn. And so learning, you know, I loved learning. Okay. I know you've been in investment banking. I became an investment banker reporting to the CEO of the organization, and I didn't know how to do an IRR. And I told him that. He says, "I know that, but I know you, and you'll know by 2 days." And he was right. And so it's that having that ability, and it all comes down to other people, all right, and behaving in ways that basically other people, you know, see something in you, all right. That's been the story of my life. And so, you know, I went to academia and not being a true academic.
Amazing. You've been very modest, Ed. But my next question is that you have written extensively on leadership development. What are a few key traits that define a successful leader in the 21st century?
Let's start out with humility. I think that's very, very important.
Yeah.
Mastery of self, taking ownership of self, all right? Your mind, your body, how you think, and most importantly, how you behave with other people, all right? Mastery of self. The ability to be highly adaptable, to be a real good listener. Leaders to be real good listeners. Too many leaders are real good tellers.
Correct.
All right? They tell you what to do and they think they know. A real good leader enables others. My job as a leader to enable you to be, bring your best self to work and to do your best work so you can have happiness, so you can have meaningful work. I got to enable that. I can't command and control it.
Yeah.
And it's not all about me. And this whole thing about enabling gets into otherness. All right. I treat people with dignity, human dignity. I know people's names, so to speak, not so to speak. So, you know, I talk to people. I treat them and behave with them in ways that they feel like they can trust me and that I trust them. And so it's so much of great leadership is emotional, emotional connections between people. I've been very fortunate to work with some great leaders. And every one of those great leaders, they were in different businesses. The founder of Southwest Airlines, one of the biggest hotel chains in the United States, one of the biggest clothing companies in the United States. The leaders in those companies would walk down the hall or take me through somewhere in the company, and they would never name of every person that they walk past. And they would stop and ask, how's the family? How are you doing? What can I do to help you?
Yeah.
And so it comes down to leaders basically not sitting in a room with 8 to 10 people that report to them and, you know, having discussions there, but who gets out on the floor? Who gets out to talk to people that work for them? And show them that they are really show them that I care. I care about you as a person. Yeah. That's what a great leader does.
Fascinating.
They're caring. They have high standards.
Yeah.
Okay. We're not talking with high standards. That's all good. But it's how you treat people.
Correct. Correct. Great response, sir. You know, I think all our viewers and listeners will love all these points you've given about traits of leaders. I think these are, it's amazing. My next question for you is that how do you measure the success of leadership development and high performance culture programs?
It all comes down to behaviors. You basically, I mean, you can tell people that they need to improve and you can explain how to improve, but it comes down to behaviors, all right? And the science of deliberate practice, all right? Great musicians, great athletes, great warriors, okay? Great leaders, great learners. It all comes down to how you behave. And people need to be constantly thinking about that and in picking behaviors. I'm going to behave this way, and I'm going to do it every day, and I'm going to grade myself, all right? That also is how a leader becomes a leader, all right? leader becomes a leader because he or she is taking ownership of what's going on inside of it. Ownership of their ego, ownership of their emotions, ownership of their mind, all right, et cetera, et cetera. They take ownership of their behaviors. They own it, all right? They, you know, they're very good listeners. They're not multitasking, right? It's behaviors, and you measure behaviors. And so in all of my work in academia has always had, in working with companies and individuals, is deliberate practices. Start out in the morning with some meditation. You start out with what are your behavioral goals, all right? You start out with deep breathing, so you remember how to do that when you need to calm yourself down, et cetera, et cetera. And then at the end of the day, you grade yourself. A coach, a wonderful human being that I admire so much, and he's so been so grateful to the, so for me. The last 10 years, the leading coach in the world for the last 10 years is this person. This person, every day in the evening at a certain time, has his deliberate practice person calling him and saying, all right, you're working on this. Tell me what you did today. So he's held accountable by somebody every day.
Yeah.
That's how you get behavior change.
Very interesting.
That's how you get
behavior. Very, very interesting. Thank you. My next question for you is that what role does emotional intelligence play in achieving high behavioral, cognitive, and emotional performance?
And I'm pausing to just think a little bit. It's probably number one in today's world. Number one. Emotionally, how you relate to other people is so important, and how you manage your emotions and how you come across. And the reason it's going to be or is number one is that emotions are going to be the biggest thing that smart AI can't do. All right. Smart AI is not going to be emotional. Smart AI is data driven, right? And so the emotional component is going to be even more critical in the workplace. And the workplace, as you know, coming from your background, the workplace, the environment, you know, the purpose, the psychological safety in the workplace. Can a middle-level worker or a new worker, so long as they're respectful, can they ask questions or speak up or ask why or say, I don't understand that, okay, without looking bad, and the leader basically saying, absolutely, you can ask that question. Right. That's a good question. Everybody should be listening to this, all right? We're all in this together, right? And the best organizations are going to be the organizations that have the best thinkers and the best people that have positive emotional engagement with their workmates. It's mission critical. Mission critical.
Very well said, sir. Thank you. My next question for you is, you know, on the future of work, and work as I knew it 10 years ago has changed dramatically, you know, especially with this 2.5 years of the pandemic. So I wanted to get your perspective on how do you see the future of work and employee engagement evolve in the next few years?
The future of work is going to be volatile. It's going to change because of AI. It's going to change dramatically because of AI. And so we human beings have got to be able to add value in ways the AI can't add value. And that's basically three different ways, all right? Thinking in ways AI can't think, right? That's critical thinking, innovative thinking, going into the unknown and exploring and figuring things out, making decisions where there's not a lot of data, right? AI is data driven, right?
Correct.
Selling and building caring, trusting, positive emotional relationships with other human beings, whether in the company, whether they're outside. I mean, so that's going to be a differentiator from AI. And then there's going to be trade jobs that require human dexterity of going into difficult physical areas and doing iterative diagnosis of the problem. We don't know what the problem is. Let's try this switch. Let's try this switch. Let's do this. And then iterative trial and error approaches. So if you think about it, AI's strength is, quote, thinking with quotes around it, all right? It's just a certain type of thinking. It's basically getting data and basically illuminating that data very, very fast in thoughtful ways.
Yeah.
So the critical thing then comes down to, okay, what if, you know, if you look at it, in innovative thinking, you know, that's going to be human. All right. Going into the unknown and figuring it out. All right. Now, there are some people now that say that AI will be able to go into the unknown and come back and create its own stuff.
Right.
So I think the key thing here is, what can I do that AI can't do? And how do I develop those skills?
Very interesting. So one more question relating to leadership and technology, and then I want to come to your latest book. With the rapid pace of technological change, how can organizations foster a culture of continuous learning and innovation?
First, they have to define that culture. All right. What's and they need to take a behavioral approach. How do we need to behave in order to excel? It's our behaviors. How do we have to think? How do we have to manage ourselves? How do we do reflectively listen? How do we have collective intelligence where basically it all ultimately it's going to come down to collaboration. The quality of the collaboration in the organization is going to determine its success. Well, what is that determined upon? It's determined about how people feel, whether people feel like they can basically disagree with their manager or disagree or ask questions which are challenging to the leader, whatever. And how those people respond will either open up the conversation and broaden the conversation, or they will shut it down, all right? So it's this whole thing again about the science of collective intelligence. And the science is also from MIT and Carnegie Mellon in the United States. The research is crystal clear that you know, that men are not as good a collaborators in teams as women are.
Yeah.
And so we men have got to sit back and calm the ego, quiet the ego, all right? Not, you know, not be creating my answer while someone is talking. Ask questions to explore to make sure you understand what they meant or they said. That says to somebody, I was really listening to you. That's how great conversations are going to occur, because
right.
I've stated many times in the last year with leaders is the key thing in whether your organization is going to be successful or not is the quality of the conversations that take place in your organization. Because no one person is going to have the answer.
What a powerful statement this is. You know, the quality of conversations are important in any organization. Thank you. So, Ed, I want to now talk to you about your latest book, Own Your Work Journey. Your book focuses on meaningful work and happiness. What was your motivation to address this topic at this stage?
The motivation to do this book, the Only Word Journal, was my great concern about the number of people in the world who could be left behind because of AI. And so this book was written for everybody really 17, 18 years or older. And the interesting thing is the content is the basic content that I've used in earlier books in different ways for, you know, big companies, all right? So the science here is the same. It doesn't matter how much education you have, what age you are, et cetera, et cetera. And so the purpose of this is I wanted to lay out a how-to book, how do I basically take ownership, all right, of myself, my ego, my mind, my body, my listening, how do I learn, all right, and give people actionable tools and behaviors that are used by the, you know, some of the best leaders in the world, all right, and so it's a how-to book. It's a short book. It's only 127 pages long. But it's got 28 tools and practices and 35 personal workshops where people basically answer questions and create their own answers in those workshops. And then there's some discussion parts we have. And then they then start saying, okay, I'm going to do this. And I start measuring myself. So it's a... why is it it's a very different book than most of my books, because it's written for a wider audience, and it's written for the audience who has probably the highest risk of being left behind.
And that's
why the book is priced very, very cheaply, all right, a book, and so to make it affordable. And it works. It's being used in some schools here in the United States, other places, because it's a how-to book, all right? It's a how-to book. And it holds you accountable because you've got a lot of tools in there that you can use, but it gives you also the way of how do I start? You start small. And you build. And what's the building blocks? What's the building blocks? That makes sense.
Absolutely. Makes a lot of sense. And before I ask you the next question, I'm going to ask all our viewers and listeners to go and check out Professor Edward Hess's book, Own Your Work Journey. I'm going to check it out myself. So, Ed, my next question is, how do you suggest individuals start bringing their best self to work every day, as you talk about in your new book?
Well, I start out with some of the biggest challenges, and one is quiet ego. All right, so and this generally impacts men more than women as a general rule, but the building blocks really start out with having a quiet ego and calming our minds. And the practices there with the calming of the minds are mindfulness meditation. I invite everybody to, you know, to begin meditating and starting it 2 to 3 minutes at a time, and you know, building up over the years, I mean, etc. And so it's and why is ego and calming the mind so important? Well, Big ego gets in the way of thinking and learning. All right. If you don't have a calm mind, you don't hear correctly. You don't are open to seeing things. All right. It's your sort of all inner. You don't do it. And so I'm trying to, and I've tried to lay out a platform was you do these things. All right. And ultimately we have a you know, there's many different practices, but we start out with the quiet ego, all right? And what does that mean? And how can you have a quiet ego? And that requires mindfulness meditation. It requires gratitude, practices, all right, saying thank you, being appreciative for what people that are helping you, being appreciative of the people in your life, because all of this creates positive emotions. So I'm trying to get away from fear. The two biggest inhibitors to learning are ego and fear.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are fearful. They're fearful of asking questions because they think it makes them look bad. And, you know, but the reality is you're going to have to learn how to ask questions.
Correct.
And if you're working with people who don't want to answer your questions, you're working in the wrong place. Okay. You need to find a place that basically will answer good questions.
Yeah.
So it's that, and it works. It works, and you know it works. I mean, the history and the research on meditation and the research that's been done on high emotional engagement and the power of positive emotions.
Correct.
Right? The power of positive emotions. There is, you know, and the book gives people a way to train themselves and start out small and build. And, you know, and have their mantras that they say, have their, what am I doing this morning? Well, I'm doing 3 minutes of meditation. I'm doing 2 or 3 minutes of gratitude where I'm either sending notes to somebody or writing down who I want to thank for helping me on this, or just to say that I care about you and I appreciate you. That type of work on a daily basis, it over time, it builds up. And then all of a sudden, it's like magical, all right? Comes part of you. And, you know, you do it every day. And that's bringing your best self to the table, your best self to your life, to your family, to your friends, to your work. And most importantly, to yourself, because you're taking ownership of yourself instead of letting other people's views of you define you, dictate you.
What a great response, sir. Thank you. And Ed, my last question to you, and this is for a lot of the young people who will listen to our conversation, and you have, you know, dealt with so many young students throughout your career. What is the one piece of advice you would give to someone who's just starting off on their career in today's dynamic work environment?
Wow, one piece. Mastery of self.
Very interesting.
Mastery of self. Work on being your best self. Understanding what that is and taking ownership of how you behave, how you think, how you treat other people.
Yeah.
But mastery of self, and as you know, and the practices, embracing daily practices, and you start small, and you build up, and you'll build up over the years. Okay. And it will be part of your life, because what it is that you're taking ownership, right? Of the book title, Own Your Work Journey. Take ownership of you, all right? Because you can be, all of us can be a better you, and becoming a better you, and that's a lifelong journey.
Right.
All right. And as you become a better you, things completely change in your world and how you behave, how you feel. Right, the impact you have, the type of friends you have, etc. And in this big digital age with AI, our humanity needs to be very positive and out there, where our humanity still excels over AI, and AI is a tool.
Very well said. Very well said. And on those wise words, one piece of advice which you just came up with in two words, which is master yourself, such wise words indeed. Know Your Best Self. Thank you, Ed, for speaking to me about your own amazing journey. Thank you for speaking to me about leadership. You know, I loved all the points you gave me for the traits of a good leader. You told us several times about the importance of getting away from ego and fear, which are two weaknesses any leader can have. Thank you also for speaking to me about your new book, Own Your Work Journey, and how it can be a fantastic tool for a lot of young people. Thank you for speaking to me, and good luck to you.
Thank you for having me, and same to you, sir. It's an honor to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.